Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome. Monday show for you.
So, you know what that means. We are jam-packed. Got a lot of important news on healthcare. We're going to talk quite a bit about that. Trump unveils Made in America Week and continues to be a raging hypocrite. And we'll demonstrate that for you as well. What happens when the Russia story meets regular people? I think you all know what's going to happen. Got some hilarious phone calls into CNN that I want to share with you. And then also, we have marijuana sales absolutely soaring in Colorado, providing further evidence that, of course, we should legalize recreational marijuana. And we'll check in on how things are going in Turkey since the failed coup. So a whole lot of stuff. Don't go anywhere. Sit back, relax. Let's get started. And we're going to dive right into it with what's going on with healthcare. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price made a damning admission about Trump care over the weekend. Listen to this. Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price suggested Sunday that the nation's health insurance system ought to operate as it did before the Affordable Care Act was passed. During an appearance on ABC's This Week, Price was asked to respond to a blistering criticism of the Senate Republicans' health care proposal by two major groups representing the U.S. health insurance industry. In a letter to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier this week, the groups called the latest version of the bill simply unworkable in any form, and warned that it would cause widespread terminations of coverage to people with serious medical problems. Quote, it's really perplexing, especially from the insurance companies, because all they have to do is dust off how they did business before Obamacare, Price said, referring to an amendment proposed by Senator Ted Cruz that would allow insurers to resume sales of policies that leave out key benefits, such as prescription drugs or mental health treatment. Okay, so what they're talking about is catastrophic coverage plans. And catastrophic coverage plans were basically a scam where the health insurance companies would take your money, be a very low-cost plan, but what happens is you don't get covered unless you're, like, about to die. And even if you're at the point where you're about to die, there's a tremendously high deductible that you have to pay or copay that you have to pay. And it doesn't cover like 98% of issues that you might have when it comes to healthcare. So people who are young and healthy love those plans, but then when something happens where they actually need real coverage, they get screwed. And in fact, under this Cruz amendment, they're locked out of the regular insurance market for something like 6 months if they have the catastrophic coverage and then something happens. Where they want coverage, but it's not included in their catastrophic coverage, they can't, like, go to another plan. So it kind of, like, locks them in to that bad decision that they made. Now, the article from the health insurance companies, I got to be honest, man, I don't believe them. So to me, this is just like when, like, you ask ExxonMobil or BP their thoughts on climate change and the Paris Agreement, and they're like, oh, yes, we totally agree with the Paris Agreement. And we think climate change is real and it is a big problem. So they say these things, but that's just for PR reasons, because behind the scenes they act in the opposite way, where they know their profits are going to go up, they know it's better for the bottom line, if we don't go along with the Paris Agreement and if we don't actually do something to fight climate change, because the ultimate end goal in fighting climate change is what? The elimination of fossil fuels. That's what it is. You think ExxonMobil and BP and Chevron don't know that? Of course they know that. So when they say things like, oh, yeah, no, totally, we're on board with fighting climate change, that's because at this point the facts and the evidence are so overwhelming that that's the best move that they can make for PR reasons to appear like they're hip and they're down with the times and they understand what's going on. They're more savvy than just going out there like many of the Republican politicians and going, we don't know if climate change is happening. Or the other argument of, we know it's happening, but maybe it's a good thing. So it's the same thing with these health insurance companies. They're like, oh, please don't go back to the way you were doing business before. They actually would love that. And, I mean, that's the main point of the story, too, is like, look at what Tom Price is arguing. He just comes out and says it. Like, hey, dipshit, you should have found a way to at least be more clever and, like, code it. But he couldn't even code it. He's like, yeah, they should just brush off the book on how they were doing it before Obamacare. So you mean the system that was so incredibly abysmal and hurt the American people so much that we desperately needed reform? He's like, let's go back to that system. Let's go back to the bad old days. But that shows you these guys are ideologues. It's not about – they're doing – trying to do health care reform and health insurance reform, and everything they're proposing makes things worse. So they're like, oh, yeah, we need to reform this, but our ideas kick 28 million people more off of health insurance. So then why are you even doing it? It's like you're doing anti-reform. You're doing reform in the wrong direction. So, but that shows you they're ideologues and that to them all that matters is the sanctity of the free market and letting the health insurance companies get away with whatever the hell they want to get away with. Again, I don't buy this letter from the health insurance. Oh, this is such a bad idea. Please do not go in this direction. We will have to kick a lot of people off of insurance. I love that. Like, I mean, look, we're going to have to kick a lot of people off of insurance. Yeah, because you're, again, legally given the ability to do that, and you're going to do it to maximize profit for your shareholders because you're a rapacious, for-profit, price-gouging health insurance company. So they're in cahoots. The Republicans and the health insurance companies are in cahoots, but it's amazing that Tom Price would just come out and say that. He would just come out and say, let's go back to how we were doing it before Obamacare. And that's the thing that's so incoherent about the right on this issue of health care and health insurance. If you ask somebody on the left, hey, what's the ideal health insurance system? You're going to get an answer like that. You're going to say Medicare for all. I don't know what you mean. Of course, Medicare for all. Every other modern nation has one version or another of a single-payer system. Yeah, that's what we should have. So that we have our answers, and we have it, and it's based on evidence. Now, if you ask somebody on the right, to be fair to run-of-the-mill Republicans, there are more Republican, average Joe Republicans that support Medicare for all than don't support Medicare for all. So they're exempt from my criticism. I'm talking to people in the party establishment, the elite in Washington. You ask them, hey, if you're crafting a health insurance system or health care system from scratch, what's the ideal system? Their answer, they got nothing for you.
What we should do is we should eliminate the lines around the states and allow the insurance companies to go from state to state, cross state lines, and we should...
Like, it's all just talk points.
Do tort reform and make sure that people can't sue for a lot of money and...
What? You think these are going to solve any of the serious issues we have in our system? Millions of people who are uninsured, medical bankruptcies out the wazoo, deaths from lack of coverage. Like, you're not addressing any of those things. And then finally, when you get down to the heart of it, what will they tell you? Free market. That's what they'll tell you. Oh, but the ideal health insurance is free market. It's free market. That's what it is. It should be free market. But how do they answer for the fact that before Obamacare, it was the wild, wild west of the free market. And what were the results? The results were horrendous. That's why we needed immediate reform. So we already tried your ideal system, and your ideal system was the worst possible system. So we already tried it. And even under Obamacare, you're keeping the private health insurance companies in control of the system, and we still have massive problems because of them. So it's They act like this is such a classic Republican politician move. They act like we've never tried their shitty ideas when that's all we've tried, and it's what led to the problems in the first place. It is the problem. It's like with, you know, their economic ideology. Well, you know, what we should do is we should deregulate and cut taxes for the rich. Yeah, let's try that. Okay, but that's what we did in the 19-teens and the 1920s. We had the Roaring Twenties, and then boom, we had the Great Depression. Everything fell off a cliff. That's what we did under Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, specifically the tax cuts were under George W. Bush, but the deregulation was under Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. And what do we have? Same thing. Boom, bust cycle. Everything takes off. Wow, oh my God, look at this. The housing prices are going up and they will never come down. It is 2006 and we are idiots. And then boom, 2007, 2008, subprime mortgage crisis, Great Recession. Because every time you deregulate and cut taxes for the rich, that's what happens. But that they can't help themselves. That's right. You know, maybe we should try deregulating and cutting taxes for the rich. We've tried that 1,000 fucking times, and every time there's a giant crash. How do you not get this? Or they get it, but they don't care. They don't care because the goal isn't a fundamentally stable economy that's good for everybody. The goal is, I want my rich executive friends to run out the back door with all the money. So if that's priority number one, then they're doing well, because that's all they're trying to fulfill. And that they do succeed at fulfilling. So, man, the admissions that these guys make, how disconnected does Tom Price have to be to just say that? Yeah, let's go back to what it was like before. When everybody was getting fucked over except the mega rich, that's what you want to do? That's what you want to do. He's like, yeah, let's do that. But you know what? I don't know why I'm surprised, because this is a guy, Tom Price, what is it? He traded like $300,000 in healthcare stocks in companies that he proposed legislation that would affect their bottom line. I mean, that corruption is so in your face and so overt and brazen that that may actually violate laws, which is why Trump had to fire. He didn't have to. He did, because he's a corrupt piece of shit. But that's why Trump fired Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney who was investigating Tom Price. Another scandal that nobody talks about. That's a real scandal with the Trump administration. Don't ask the Democrats. They're too busy chasing their own tail over the Russia issue to talk about something where all the evidence is right there. U.S. attorney investigating corrupt Trump pick, Health and Human Services Secretary, who traded in healthcare stock as he was proposing legislation to bump those stocks up, clear corruption. And then he fires the guy when, oh, shit, he's investigating the guy I picked? Fired. And that's why they picked Tom Price for Health and Human Services Secretary. They know he's a good old boy who's going to go along to get along and be corrupt like the rest of them. So, man, you want to talk about the fucking swamp. This is the swamp. This is the cesspool. Whatever the fuck you want to call it. It is the worst of the worst of the worst. And they can't even hide their how loathsome they are now. Let's go back to how the healthcare system was before. Because every objective way of measuring that system, it was worse. It's still shitty now. But that's because it's still the private health insurance companies in the driver's seat. But every objective, I don't know why I'm struggling saying that word today, measurable way of looking at the system, that did not come out very cleanly, but I think you get the point. Every single, by any standard that you evaluate the previous system, it was worse. But that's what he wants to get back to, because his rich buddies would get even richer. Okay. Next. All right, now let's move along to one more thing on Trump Care. Oh no, what have I done? Shit, I fucked up. What have you done, Kyle? Okay, hold on one second, because I have the wrong quote on the page here. So that means I have to pull up the article and find the quote, which is a little bit of a pain in the ass, because I'm live. So so wait for it. And this is, it's not like I could do the story without this quote either. This quote is pretty much as important as it gets. If I can't find the article, I'm going to cry. Yeah, I can't find the article. Well, fuck me with an iron rod. Okay. LA Times. LA Times. Hidden. Okay. Fuck. I'm really not going to be able to find this thing, am I? Bear with me, people. All right, I guess I got to put this story off until after the break, which I don't want to do, but I'm going to have to do it. I don't really have a choice. Fuck, man. I'm really pissed off. How did I fuck up like that? Okay, anyway, let's get past it. Okay, let's go to Trump and Made in America Week. So President Trump is planning Made in America Week, which on the face of it, I mean, look, that sounds great, right? I mean, we always, progressives always talk about how we have to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., we have to give our fellow citizens good high-paying jobs, and we have to stop, you know, exploiting slave labor or near-slave labor in foreign countries. So that's all fine and dandy. In fact, this is an idea that you would think a progressive could come up with. Yeah, you know, Made in America Week. In other words, like, fuck TPP and NAFTA Week. That's another way of saying Made in America Week. But here's why, of course, it's hilarious and hypocritical coming from Donald Trump. Take a look at this. We know of at least 12 countries where Trump products were manufactured. China, the Netherlands, Mexico, India, Turkey, Slovenia, Honduras, Germany, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Vietnam, and South Korea. Further, Trump products transited other countries through the packaging and shipping process, meaning workers in more than 12 countries contributed to getting many of Trump's products made, packaged, and delivered to the United States. So, classic Trump disconnect and hypocrisy. Do as I say, not as I do, is the way of describing it. So when I, yeah, make your products in America, that's what you got to do. That's what we care about in this administration. America first. But wait, you have your products made everywhere else but America. You're 12 different countries? And many of those countries you've publicly maligned. I mean, China, oh my God, trade policy. They're so terrible with trade policy, and they manipulate their currency and this and that. Anyway, when am I going to get my shipment of my stuff from China? Mexico. We're going to build a wall. We're going to build the wall and then find a way for my products to get around the wall or under the wall or over the wall because I exploit the labor in Mexico. Tremendous, believe me. So why would you expect anybody to follow these rules that you say you want to lay out, but you don't lay out, by the way? Why would you expect anybody to make their products in America if you can't even make your products in America? You don't get to do that. You don't get to say, "And make everybody's got to make it in America. Come on now, manufacture here." But I'm going to keep it in the 12 different countries. Wait, what? What? By the way, I'm not done with the hypocrisy on this. Bibles and beds are some of the only American-made products used at Trump's D.C. hotel. And then when you dive into the details of that article, 21 of 31 items in his hotels are not made in America. 21 of 31 items are not made in America. And then, of course, there was a big story about how Ivanka uses underpaid Bangladeshi labor. All of Ivanka's products are made overseas. I think with Trump, there's at least some that are in the U.S. All of Ivanka's are overseas. And then when a reporter actually did a decent job and asked the White House, well, hold on now, they're doing Made in America Week, but does that mean that we can get a commitment from Donald Trump that he and his family will from now on be making all their products in America? The response was, we'll have to get back to you on that. In other words, fuck no, overlook our hypocrisy. I'm not going to do that. And how arrogant of them to think, like, it's okay, we'll just dupe everybody in the country and make them think that we're all rah-rah American manufacturing when our actions prove otherwise. But, you know, people can see what you're doing. It's not that hard to realize how big of a hypocrite you are and how you make all your products elsewhere and, you know, how you're just a liar. There's something that's really off-putting about somebody who's that shameless in how they lie. Like, you would think that any normal person in the situation Trump's in would try to, like, well, I mean, now I have no choice. I have to follow my own edicts. I have to bring jobs back over here, I mean, or else I'll be the biggest joke on the planet. They just don't do it. They don't care. And they're relying on a shitty media to not expose them and hammer away on the things where they are most guilty and where there should be the most outrage. And most of the time, that's what happens. The media is too busy with their head up their own ass on this Russia issue that with stuff like this, it gets off the hook. Now, to be fair, many outlets did cover this one, but it's just something that doesn't, for whatever reason, they don't cover it with the same amount of outrage and focus and detail as you have with the Russia issue. So, you know, I think that covering something like this endlessly with outrage and focus, see, that's justified outrage. That's merited outrage. I think something like this would chip away at his favorability rating a lot more than something like the Russia issue. Now, Trump's already the least popular president at this point in his presidency in the past 70 years. So he's already hurting. There's no doubt about that. But to me, if the media focused more on, you just signed a bill that guts internet privacy rights that only 6% of Americans wanted. If they focus on this, if they focus on the fact that Trump signed an executive order that lets coal companies pollute the waterways, if they focus on the fact that he's escalating war in Iraq and Syria and elsewhere, if you focus on those things, I feel like his approval rating would be like 10% at this point as opposed to the 36% that it is. So, but that's just me. And that's why you guys come here, because I think many of you tend to agree with that line of thinking. But Made in America Week from an administration and a president and a family that doesn't make their stuff in America. All right, let's go to Obama and a smug person in his administration that got under my skin. And then we'll take our first break, and I'll try to find that article, the quote from that article. The Hill had an article that really got under my skin that I wanted to share with you. Look at this. Ex-Obama official trolls Trump administration. None of us needed lawyers. Here's what they say. A White House cabinet secretary under former President Barack Obama took an implicit swipe at Trump administration officials on Friday, saying he didn't know of anyone in the Obama White House that needed to hire a lawyer. Quote, I served 4 years in the Obama White House. I never hired a lawyer, and I don't know anyone who did. Chris Liu, who also served as a deputy secretary of labor under Obama, wrote on Twitter. Just thought I'd point that out. So this, I feel like this is like the low-hanging fruit and the shitty arguments that many partisan Democrats think, like, that's it, that's it. Like, there was an article I saw a while ago. The scandal under the Obama administration at this point in his presidency was that he ate a burger with mustard. Because Sean Hannity actually did a segment where he criticized Obama for eating a burger with mustard. But here's the problem with that kind of thinking. What you're saying is anything but Trump now is acceptable and is okay and is good. Now, if you don't believe me on that and you think I'm exaggerating, well, go look at how David Frum is now viewed on the left. Or not, the left is not the right way to categorize it. Go look how David Frum is viewed among the loyalist Democrats. Go look at how Evan McMuffin is viewed around loyalist Democrats. Go look at how George W. Bush is now viewed. I mean, I've seen tweets and heard people say, oh, yeah, we want, if only we had reasonable Republicans like George W. Bush back. I've heard progressives cite a George W. Bush ethics lawyer to make arguments against Donald Trump. A George W. Bush ethics lawyer. So, I mean, that guy was okay with illegal war and torture. Guantanamo Bay was okay with one of the worst presidencies ever, but oh my God, Trump's the worst. So now the George W. Bush ethics lawyer is okay. He's in our circle of friendship now. Bill Kristol even. Bill Kristol, the man who's never been right about anything, that may be literal. That may be literal. When he says something anti-Trump now, you have partisan Democrats like, oh yeah, Bill Kristol, reasonable guy. So now neocons are reasonable. People who we previously viewed as war criminals, you think are reasonable? It's just sad. And then furthermore, look, that point is just beyond hacky because it implies what?
Well, Obama didn't do anything. See, we didn't hire a lawyer or anything. I mean, I was there for 4 years. Nobody I knew even needed a lawyer.
Except what happened under Obama? Well, for one thing, record deportations. There was a record number of deportations under President Obama. He took our intervention number from 2 under George W. Bush, it was 2 full-scale wars, to 7 interventions. So he put the drug war, he put the drone war on steroids, and 90% of the people killed under Obama's drone war were civilians. So it took interventions from 2 to 7, increased the drone war. Guantanamo Bay was still open on his watch. So how can anybody sit there and say, like, well, there wasn't any scandals, there wasn't any problem. You have to understand, the way our Constitution works, you're supposed to get the approval of Congress for war. They didn't even bother. They just said, yeah, we're just going to do war in Yemen and Pakistan and Somalia and send the drones there. And they said, but it's okay. We're just going to add that on to the authorization for the use of military force under Bush. So liberal Democratic president girding the Constitution and saying, we'll just add more interventions and just add it on to the previous authorization for use of military force. That's fine, right? No, that's not fine. And now you set that precedent. And now Donald Trump gets to use that precedent for endless war. And we're only talking about that. We're not talking about, Edward Snowden and how he was treated under the war on whistleblowers under the Obama administration, going soft on Wall Street, not prosecuting anybody from Wall Street. So this idea of like, oh, man, anybody but Trump is great, and wasn't Obama like the best president ever? Like, no. So now Trump is so bad and so far right that people say, hey, regular far right is fine. Like, Trump is super far right, but that makes regular far right normalized. That word everybody likes to use now? Yeah, that's what happens. That's now normalized. Center right, normalized. So it allows us to make excuses for not going in an actually left-wing direction, a populist left direction. And that's sad. So I just wish everybody would still have high standards. We keep lowering the bar, lowering the bar, lowering the bar, lowering the bar. And when you point at the boogeyman, that's the result. But if you realize the whole system is fucking you, and even the supposedly good politicians are not that great, that's the only way to get real change, is to be unapologetic in pushing for that change. Okay. All right, let's take a break, and I am going to try to find that article, which I need so much. And then when we come back, we'll get to it, and we'll get to CNN, Michael Smirkanish, oh boy, all that stuff. Stay right there.
Yeah. You know what? I like the trail. No diggity, no doubt. Play on, play it. Play on, play it. Yo, Trey, drop the verse. going down, fade to black shoot. The homies got at me, collab creations, bump like agony, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, that dog couldn't catch me. Who could stop with Dre making moves, attracting honeys like a magnet, giving them orgasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies Black Street and Teddy, the original rough shaker.
The left. I feel like I'm the left. natural nigga left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me slap you with the left. The left. You will face a wind, don't grab you with the left. The left. I feel like I'm the natural nigga left. The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. God, please protect me if this shit go left.
All right, y'all, we're back. Okay. Let's... Motherfucker. Today, things are not going smoothly behind the scenes on today's show. Oh, man. I keep fucking... This site that... The LA Times site is, like, slowing my computer up. Anyway.
Okay.
Let me do this before I lose the article here. I got the thing I needed during the break. All right, let's do it. There's a little notice provision in the new version of Trump Care that nobody really caught until the LA Times went through the bill with a fine-tooth comb. So listen to this. The senators exempt themselves from the loss of consumer protections. A convoluted provision in the amended measure exempts Congress and its staff members from the loss of guarantees for those with pre-existing conditions and other consumer protections. You won't find the words Congress and exemption next to each other anywhere in the bill. You have to know that 1312D3D is the provision of the Affordable Care Act requiring members of Congress and their staffs to obtain coverage through the Obamacare exchanges, and the notice on page 167 of the Senate bill that the elimination of consumer protection is non-applicable to that section. How amazing is that? So understand, this was one of the things that Republicans used as a key talking point against Obamacare. They would say stuff like, anything that the American people should be subject to, people of Congress and the Senate should be subject to. How dare we exempt ourselves from Obamacare? And they use that as evidence of like, oh, it must be so shitty. It must be so shitty that we're giving them that health care. We have different health care. We should all be on the same health care. And it's so, campaigns were run on that. And then now, when the Republicans have complete control, and they're crafting Trump Care, and they're on, I don't know, version number 4, I think, of Trump Care, trying to somehow marry the really, really extreme conservatives with just the regular extreme conservatives, when nobody's looking, they're like, oh, why don't we slip in that we get the protections for pre-existing conditions? Because, of course, who the fuck doesn't want protections for pre-existing conditions for themselves? Who doesn't want it? There's not a single person on the planet who would say, if it's for me, yeah, pre-existing condition protection, I'm good. Everybody wants it because it's fucking common sense. Through no fault of your own, you had some sort of condition, you lose your insurance for whatever reason, you lost your job or what have you, you missed one payment. Doesn't matter. Well, now I can't get covered. So the people who need coverage the most can't get covered because our system's that shitty. And they decided, everybody else, yeah, it's optional on a state-by-state basis. So the red states are going to say, nobody's protected for pre-existing conditions here. The blue states will keep those protections. But all the people in red states are going to be victims now as a result of that. And now Congress says, well, obviously we're going to exempt ourselves. We deserve the protections for pre-existing conditions. So you know what this shows me? It shows me that they know how wrong they are about stuff. That's what it shows me. Because if you really had the courage of your convictions on this, you would think, no, it is preferable to not cover pre-existing conditions across the board. Philosophically, it is a position that is better than the opposite of covering everybody with pre-existing conditions. If you really believed it, you'd be happy to say, yeah, I don't need the protection. I don't think that protection should exist, protections for pre-existing conditions. That puts an unfair burden on the health insurance company. So obviously, I'm going to lump myself in the crowd that shouldn't get protections for pre-existing conditions. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that because they don't actually have an ideological, philosophical position that they thought through. They did it because they want coverage and protection, and they don't give a fuck about
their constituents getting coverage and protection because their real donors are the ones who they're crafting policy for. That's the private health insurance companies, that's Wall Street, and that's every other big money donor. So this is such an admission, man. Nobody knows this, nobody talks about it, but this is something every Republican should be the most mad about. They should be saying, what the fuck? I thought we were trying to make a bill that's good here and that is good for everybody and is in line with our philosophy and our ideology, but you're exempting yourself. What the fuck is this? Giant, disgusting, grotesque hypocrites. And they don't even believe the words that come out of their own mouths. Because if they did, they'd say, yeah, I don't want protections for pre-existing conditions either. I think that's a bad idea. But no, they think it's a good idea. When it's them and their family's asses on the line, they love that idea. Just like they'd love Medicare for all if it came down to saving their own family's lives. So they want, you know, taxpayer-funded health care for them, but not for you. Not for you. Not for somebody they don't know, some icky peasant who they don't want to have a normal, decent life. Okay. Okay, now let's go to Michael Smirkanish and laugh at him. Michael Smirkanish is a CNN host. He has roughly 6 fans, and he asked his radio audience to comment on the Trump-Russia story, and what followed is pretty funny. So let's watch, and then we'll discuss.
I began this year by pledging right here on CNN that I wanted to escape my bubble more often. The election results, they took me by surprise, and I was feeling disconnected. Well, this week I got more than I bargained for from my own SiriusXM radio audience. There had just been a succession of significant stories published in the New York Times about a June 9, 2016 meeting in Trump Tower that we now know was attended by Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort, among others. As I've updated my radio audience on those developments, I've been careful to balance my coverage with perspective from the right. On Monday, after my news summary, the phone lines quickly filled. And first up was a caller who told me that I should be ashamed of myself because I had spent time on the latest bombshell from the New York Times, notwithstanding, balanced it with a view from the New York Post. The first caller was Brad. He was from Iowa.
I thought you were better than this. Keep kicking that dead dog, Michael. Maybe it'll wake up.
Do you find it significant that the president's son took a meeting with a Russian national, involved Manafort and Kushner, where the promise was, we are bringing you dirt on Hillary? Significant or not?
Big deal. No, not at all. Who cares about dirt on that old hag at the Hillary?
That's not typical. My callers tend to come from the lower 48 and usually represent a nice cross-section of the country, both racially and politically. But to my surprise, the next caller from Vermont basically agreed with Brad. Many on hold wanted to castigate the president and his son. But instead of taking their calls, I did something I'd never done in 27 years of radio hosting. I cleared the call board. And I requested only callers who agreed with the first two. And the results were eye and ear opening. I discovered a huge number of others also maintaining it was the proverbial nothing burger. Take a listen.
CNN, New York Post, New York Times, these guys, they have 0 ounce of credibility. I'd say zero, negative zero. I mean, they're just horrible.
Some of the media outlets get so in the weeds with some of these stories that it just disinterests me after a little while. So even if it's true, that's fine. It eventually didn't affect my vote at the ballot box.
It is an important, worthy story. But give it the time it needs and then move on.
So at this point, it just seems like a witch hunt after President Trump. The only thing I'm angry about Trump is he hasn't arrested that witch yet. She should be in cuffs. You're an establishment... That's all you are. You're a piece of
That last part, by the way, directed at me. I'm the establishment A. Well, you heard it. So if you think the Donald Trump Jr. story is the one that changes Trump supporter minds, you might want to think again. My experience reminded me of candidate Donald Trump saying that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose his base.
No. No. That's cheap, what he just did there. Because, Michael, it's not just Trump supporters who say, get the fuck off it already on this story. It's me. Nobody can accuse me of being pro-Trump. If you go through the Secular Talk library and stories we've done of Trump, it's probably 95%, 98% just ripping him a new asshole on a daily basis on virtually every single issue. So you can't just,
they never change their mind. So unreasonable, these assholes.
It's not all Trump voters that are like, okay, let's move on past this one. Let's move on past this one. Let's get to other stuff. So he's like, what's funny is he starts the segment by saying, you know, I want to make an effort to get out of my bubble and see what real people in America are thinking after the election results surprised me. Then by the end of the segment, he's like, look how disconnected and stupid these people are.
That was the original problem, is you said you were in your bubble and you only listened to people who agreed with you. And that's one of the things that led to Trump winning, is that there were people in their bubble who, oh, Hillary's going to win, obviously. I don't even see how it's going to be close or whatever. And then by the end of the segment, you go right back to that same mindset which gave us Trump. The mindset of, like, well, I'll just dismiss them. See, if Trump shot somebody on the street, he would still get away with it because his followers are that stupid and overly loyal idiots. I mean, look at them. They're like dogs just following their master. That's what this is. What happened? I thought you were going to try to open up your mind and and smear them all, by the way. They're all obviously Trump supporters who say get off it with this story. That's not true. It's not even close to true. All right, so I want to be more specific on this because I got a lot of shit for the position I took on this, but I think that's because I just didn't explain it well. It can't possibly be because the position is something that people are like, I don't agree with you on that. And actually, before I get into that, let me just say real fast, I find it hilarious that Michael Smirkanish is such a loser that he was like, they're talking about me, the establishment A. Well, you heard it. Like, okay, I get it. You probably can't curse on CNN because the rules or whatever, but what a baby. Like, like he makes it seem like it's, oh, I'm being a bad boy, Mommy. Look, I said A and then left a blank, and people in their head said asshole. I'm all grown up. I can curse. it just feels gross watching this guy's show. Okay, but anyway, so my question for people who really are going down that rabbit hole on Trump Russia is this. I have many questions. The first one is, do you think Don Jr. is going to go to prison? Do you think anybody in the Trump circle is going to go to prison? Now, my guess is, even if you are really in the weeds in this story, you're going to go, well, nah, I don't think so. Maybe there's a small chance, but I doubt it. So, okay, and by the way, I agree. I don't think anybody's going to go to prison. Well, then comes the next question. Is there going to be impeachment over this? Now, this one, you might get more 50-50 answers from people. Some might say yes, some might say no. So I don't think you can successfully impeach over this. Let's put that aside and say, yes, you can get impeachment over this. Okay. Well, then if you impeach, Donald Trump is gone, and you get Mike Pence. So then what? You're in just as bad of a situation, if not a worse situation. Okay? So is everybody with me so far? In other words, point, what I'm trying to establish is, what's your end game? Do you have an end game? Or are you just, you just want to talk about this for the sake of talking about it? Because usually in politics, if you really care about policy, that's why you focus on the policy, and the end game is to get those policies implemented or get the numbers for your team, your party, to then get your policies implemented. This, there's no policy implications. It's just, let's talk about this issue that's a hot button issue, and then what? What's your end game? Is your end game impeachment? Because if it is impeachment, or if it's Don Jr. going to jail or anybody in Trump circle going to jail, I don't think that's going to happen. If it's impeachment, I don't think that's going to happen. But even if it does happen, you get Pence. And then under Pence, you have just as bad, if not worse, in terms of who's running the country. And then you get to the next question, which is, what exactly are you mad about if you're down the Trump-Russia rabbit hole? And I'm not asking that in like a pithy, you know, rhetorical way. Like, I'm genuinely curious what people's answer to this is, because I haven't heard anything that I go, oh, I agree with you and I'm mad about that. So the number one answer I get when I ask this question is very simply, look, you cannot get dirt on your opponent from a foreign power, because that's the collusion thing that we're mad about. Collusion, collusion, collusion. Traitor, or treasonous, or whatever the fuck they say. Now, the treasonous charge we're going to dismiss up front, because treason means you are working together with a country that we're at war with to undermine our government. That indeed is not the case. We're not at war with Russia, and Hillary indeed is not the representative of our government. She was a candidate wanting to be president. So the treason charge automatically dismissed is just not anywhere near true. Okay. But if the claim is you cannot get dirt on your opponent from a foreign power, you have to understand it is just a matter of record that Hillary and her campaign and the DNC did the same thing. So if you're being objective and you want people to start going to jail or there to be, you know, lawsuits filed and stuff like that, well, then you have to, if you really believe in the standard that you just set up, which is you cannot get dirt on your opponent from a foreign government, then you would want cases against not only the Trump camp, but the Hillary camp. Now, again, in the Hillary instance, it was with Ukraine. So they worked with the Ukrainian government to try to get dirt on Trump because Ukraine wanted Hillary because Hillary would be more her campaign rhetoric was much more hawkish against Russia, and Ukraine obviously wants NATO's backing in making sure Russia doesn't take more of their land like they took Crimea. So Ukraine tried to dig up dirt on Trump and then give it to the Hillary campaign. Now, by the same token, you remember the so-called PP tape, the PP dossier? That was the Hillary campaign hiring a firm, a research firm, an opposition research firm. They had a British spy get that information on the PP dossier from Russians. So, again, according to your own standard, if you really...
You can't work with a foreign power to get dirt on your opponent.
Well, okay, we know Trump and his campaign did it because of the meeting with the Russian lawyer. We know Don Jr. did it. We know Manafort was in there. We know Kushner was in there. So, yes, they did try to work together with a foreign power, or at the very least somebody connected to a foreign power, to get dirt on their opponent, Hillary. They did it. Guilty. But Hillary's guilty of it as well with Ukraine. The DNC and the Hillary camp are guilty of it using the British spy to get the PP information from Russia. So, again, my point is, if you're going to be objective, you have to say, okay, I guess I want cases against both campaigns. But usually the people who are involved in this frenzy will say, I want it on Trump, but then they're like, oh, okay, why are you bringing up the but Hillary point? It's not a but Hillary point. The point is, I asked you what exactly you're mad about. Your answer is you can't collude with a foreign power to get dirt on your opponent. And then I said Hillary does that too, and then you say, whatever. There's no whatever. Is that what you're mad about or not? If you're mad about it, you got to say I want cases on both campaigns. So that brings me to my next point, which is I'm of the belief you shouldn't bring charges against both of them. I honestly don't care. I don't care where they tried to get information from. You want to know why? It's fucking information. It is information. Chelsea Manning gave us information on how the U.S. military is murdering civilians. Edward Snowden gave us information on how the NSA is spying on everybody. Now, they're viewed as pariahs because that's illegal information. But we should have known it anyway. We should have known it. Now, we don't know if they actually got information that they were able to use from the Russian sources, the Trump campaign. But, like, take, for example, the issue of the DNC emails that were allegedly given by Russia to WikiLeaks. That's something I look at and I say, I'm happy we learned the information. We need to know that. For you to get mad, you're killing the messenger as opposed to getting mad at the actions we actually learned had taken place as a result of the leaks. Whether it's Hillary's speeches saying, hey, you know, there's bigotry against the rich and oppression against the rich. We should have totally free and open trade borders. as a politician, you should have public positions and private positions. They pressured the media to give them better coverage. They tried to hide the debate so that they would suppress Bernie Sanders. All that stuff. You should say, oh, okay, well, we got that information. These are leaks that the American people should know, so you don't get mad at the leaker. You get happy that you got that information, because in a democracy, we should know if there's cheating going on behind the scenes. That crazy idea. So that's the next point, which is I don't know why people would like really hate the idea that we're getting more information and dirt on various opponents. I want to know what's going on with Hillary. As long as it's not stupid private life shit, that I don't think the public really has a right to know. You know, and as long as it's not their fucking bank account information, if it's stuff we should know about them because they want to be the leader, yeah, I want to know dirt on Hillary. I want to know dirt on Trump. I want to know dirt on all the different, you know, politicians. So I think I'm pretty consistent on that. I like more information on these people is a good thing. And then another huge point is they're not – the Democrats – as a result of this story, it's undeniable. Now you're not focusing on issues that change people's lives, which hurts your election chances. Because every minute you're not talking about Medicare for all. Every minute you're not talking about free college. Every minute you're not talking about a living wage. Every minute you're not talking about ending the wars. Every minute you're not talking about ending the drug war. Every minute you're not talking about doing a new deal. Every minute that's not spent on real issues is a wasted minute. Because now people don't view the Democrats as a party that's trying to help them, you know, in their lives. They view you as simply an anti-Trump party. You're against Trump. Got it. That's it. But you need to tell them what you're for, not just what you're against. Not Russia, 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 something, something, collusion, treason, yada, yada. You have to say, here's what we're for, and this is what we're going to fight for. But people don't think you don't care about the issues because you're not focusing on the fucking issues. That's a huge point. And then the final two points. You cannot deny the hawkish overtones in how the Democrats are covering this story and talking about this story. Paul Begala said we should be debating bombing Russia. Rachel Maddow said now if Trump removes NATO troops from Russia's border, that proves Putin has dirt on Trump. So now you have the Democrats just flat out calling for being the more hawkish party in regards to another nuclear armed power. Now, I'm not saying everybody who believes the Trump-Russia stuff is on board with that, but you have to understand that this is the climate that's being created when you act like a hostile foreign power has hacked our democracy and is installing leaders and they've declared war on us. When you talk about it in that respect, which I think is massively misleading and incorrect, yeah, the logical conclusion from a lot of people is going to say, well, break out the fucking guns and let's escalate this bitch. So it's hawkish, which is the opposite of what the Democrats are supposed to stand for. And then the last point is you've also just worn out. It's fatigue, man. There are CNN hosts, I think Allison Camerota, they believe every word of the Trump-Russia story. But even they're like, I have Russia fatigue. I can't talk about it anymore because it's all we fucking spoken about. So even if you believe every word of it, there's a reason to say, you know what, pump our brakes a little bit because we're losing everybody, even people who fucking agree with us. So, God, man. It's just they're so invested in this, and I don't see an end game. And that's a bad place to be in, because I think now there's this false sense of security among certain circles of like, well, that's it. We got it. Like, we got it. This is the story. This is the one we hammer away on, and then something, something, Democrats win everything. What? No, you need, like, hard work and a coherent message about helping people, and that's nowhere to be found. Okay. That was a long segment. Good googly moogly. All right, now, how many stories do I have left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I think we should be good here, even though I went way over with that story. All right, let's talk about marijuana. We have some pretty ridiculous new numbers on marijuana sales in Colorado. This is from Newsweek. Marijuana sales in Colorado are soaring. The state, which legalized adult pot use in 2014, achieved a milestone in May when pot sales topped $100 million for the 12th consecutive month, according to a Thursday report by marijuana news site The Cannabist. Colorado sold over $127.7 million worth of cannabis flower, edible products, and concentrates in May, according to The Cannabist's analysis of the state marijuana tax data. More than $35.7 million of sales stemmed from medical marijuana purchases, and recreational use items generated $90.1 million in sales. Bethany Gomez, director of research for marijuana market research firm Brightfield Group, told the site that hitting the $100 million mark has become the new norm in Colorado, with some $1.4 billion in sales between May 2016 and May 2017. During that time, Colorado racked up over $233 million in taxes and license fees. Wow. Could you imagine how much good that money could do in states that are struggling? $233 million in taxes and license fees. $233 million in revenue for the government. Like that. In a year. In a year from when you legalize marijuana. Could you imagine how much that would help a state like Kansas with a giant deficit and a struggling economy? If we were to legalize, tax, and regulate on a federal level, we're talking about a whole new booming industry virtually overnight. The wealth creation, the job creation, I mean, it would be off the charts. Deficit reduction, funding of drug education programs, that's another thing. Funding of health care, that's another thing that you could do with this money. And there's various systems set up, whether it's Colorado or Washington State or California, with what exactly the money is going to go towards. But what people have found is when you legalize marijuana, you can tax it at a pretty hefty rate. And people go, yeah, I'd still prefer to go get the legal kind than the illegal kind, because you know you're getting a quality product that's regulated. And even if you have to pay a little bit more for it, you go do it. So I can't tell you. It's such a no-brainer. How many stories have I done talking about how legalizing marijuana is just such a no-brainer? It's from any perspective you want to look at it from a fiscal conservatism perspective, deficit hawk perspective, it's a win. From a freedom and liberty perspective, it's a win. From a jobs perspective, it's a win. So there's conservative reasons to legalize it. There's liberal reasons to legalize it. The only people who are left saying we shouldn't legalize it at this point are people who are just really old school and kind of massively ignorant on this, people like Chris Christie. Marijuana's bad. Yeah, it's bad. Anyway, give me 33 Big Macs. People like that, and of course the people lobbying against it. So the DEA, they don't want to lose their fucking job, so they're fighting tooth and nail to keep drugs illegal. They're lobbying against it. Then you have alcohol and tobacco lobbying against it, and Big Pharma in some instances, because they view marijuana as competition against them. So they say, yeah, we want to crush the competition, so let's spend money against the legalization campaigns. So, but that's it. 60% of the country wants to legalize marijuana. That's an overwhelming number. Overwhelming. And this is an issue that's moved so fast in such a short amount of time, kind of like the gay marriage issue, where you ask one year, it's like 36%. You blink, all of a sudden it's 60% of people who say, I want gay marriage. It's like the same thing. Nobody would have thought, oh, yeah, legalize marijuana. What are you talking about? That's crazy. Today, everybody's like, yeah, legalize marijuana. What the fuck's the question? So, I don't know. I hope the snowball effect has taken over, and I hope we've gone so far that now people are like, yeah, let's do it. Of course. Okay, now just let me take my final break here, and then when we come back, we will get into some of the unintended consequences of the war on drugs. And then we have a hilarious speech from Steve King on the floor of the House, and he's focusing on the serious issues facing America. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unintended consequences of the war on drugs. This is a sad story. We have some more unintended consequences in the war on drugs. Look at this. Over just 3 days in a single Pennsylvania county this month, more than 100 people reportedly overdosed on a type of synthetic marijuana known as K2. Between July 7th and July 10th, 102 people in Lancaster County were treated for K2 overdoses, according to CNN. By July 14th, an additional 56 people suffered similar afflictions, bringing the total number of K2 overdose patients in the county to 158 in just 1 week. C. Robert May, director of Lancaster Emergency Medical Services, said none of the overdoses were fatal, but patient symptoms were sometimes serious. We're seeing very sick patients. Individuals who have very low blood pressure are unconscious, and they're getting admitted to intensive care, May told CBS News. He added that the influx of overdose patients was taxing to local hospitals that are already well above capacity. So that's interesting. Synthetic marijuana hits the market to fill the void of actual marijuana, which people at times can't get their hands on because it's illegal. And the synthetic marijuana is more dangerous than the actual marijuana. Let me go ahead and tell you the number of people in Lancaster County that overdosed on regular marijuana in the same time span. Zero. Because you can't overdose on marijuana. Now, to be fair, sometimes somebody takes, like, an edible and they have more than... than they bargain for, you know, if you eat like a whole cookie, and you get higher off edibles than you do from just smoking marijuana, and sometimes people end up going to the hospital and they think something's wrong with them. But no, usually what happens is you just get a little paranoid because you went deep on the edible, and then, you know, you wake up the next day or whatever and you're fine. So sometimes there are hospital visits that are marijuana related, but it's like, you know, kind of like a newbie thing. Where it's like, yeah, I'm new to this, and, ooh, I think I'm dying because I had too much of an edible, and yada, yada, yada. Their heart beats fast, and they're, like, paranoid, but they're okay. They said there were actually serious, health implications with the K2, the synthetic marijuana. And another thing that they said is you have the impact of the dosage varies so much from package to package that it can be like 800 times more powerful in a different package. And the kind of high you get varies. Like, people could be looking for a more mellow high, and they take something that makes them hallucinate. So you have, like, all these different reactions, all these different highs, all these different dosage levels with synthetic marijuana. And the market for this wouldn't exist if we just had legal regular marijuana. But no, we keep that illegal. This fills the void, and then people get, you know, overdose on this when you can't even overdose on regular marijuana. It just shows it's reason number 9,312 why the war on drugs is just so immensely stupid. So, guys, you know, little pro tip, if you legalize regular marijuana, this the use of this stuff drops off big time. Very few people want to use the synthetic shit when you have the real shit, and the real shit is healthier, so what the fuck is there to lose? Answer, nothing. Okay. All right, let's go to Steve King and let's laugh together. So needless to say, we have a lot of problems facing the country, and Republican Congressman Steve King decided to tackle some of them in a speech on the floor of the House. Let's watch.
Experiment that's going on in our military, the greatest military in the history of the world. And when the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Gohmert, talks about how history will be written one day, this isn't a civilization killer, but it's an indication of a civilization killer. I think of the circumstances in a little bit older history, back in the 16th century and the 17th century, when the Ottoman Empire and the Muslim armies were sweeping across the countryside, and whoever they captured, they pressed into slavery. And when they pressed them into slavery, they wanted to have their crack troops. They were called Janissaries. And there were other troops too as well. But what they did in order to keep them from reproducing was that they did reassignment surgery on those slaves that they captured that they had put into their Janissary troops. And that reassignment surgery was they took them from being a virile reproductive male into being a eunuch. Now, they were suitable to work in the harem, but they found out when they put them out in the field to do battle against the enemy that they didn't have the testosterone to take on the fight. And so over a period of time, a generation or two, they finally realized, I guess we're going to have to stop turning these men into eunuchs if we're going to have them as a fighting machine. That's the Janissaries. And there's the old history through that is replete with narrative after narrative of them taking out the knife and actually cutting these anatomically complete men flush. Some would die from that, and some would live, but none of them had the will to fight. And so they decided that they were going to keep anatomically complete men, men that were producing testosterone, in their crack Janissary troops where they fought well. That's a lesson of the military, the Ottoman military from 200, 300, 400 years ago. And today we're here thinking somehow we're going to make the military better by letting people line up at their recruitment center who have planned that they want to do sexual reassignment surgery, know that it's expensive, and believe, if I can just get into any branch of the United States services, to the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, maybe become a Navy SEAL, and then submit to sexual reassignment surgery and go from a man to a woman. By the way, doesn't look like there's going to be any women going to men after they go through SEAL training. I don't think that's going to happen, at least in the current. But there's no way that this enhances the capabilities of our military. There's no way it enhances the morale of our military.
Dude, he did a whole rant against trans people in the military. Oh, God. We live in a country where we have millions of people who don't have health care. Half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. The country's falling apart at the seams. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D+. We have 7 different wars going on at the moment. And Steve King, a congressman, feels like this is the most important issue to talk about. That's unbelievable. Oh, could you imagine the way this guy's mind works? Okay, but the best part is, look at his reasoning. He says, you know, the Ottoman Empire, they would capture people, make them slaves, chop off their dick and balls, and then tell them to go fight. And they didn't want to fight. Now, obviously, that's a reason we shouldn't allow trans people in the military. Hey, Steve, maybe the reason they didn't want to fight is because they were castrated slaves. Maybe you don't want to fight for the people who castrated you and now own you like your property. Maybe that. Maybe trans people who are willing to fight and they want to be in the military, maybe that's different. Maybe people who voluntarily choose to be trans and to go in the military, maybe that's a little different than fucking castrated slaves, you gargantuan idiot. You are the dumbest fucking person. That rant made Louis Gohmert look like Noam Chomsky. Oh my God, you're so stupid, Steve King. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. He really couldn't piece together that maybe the slaves don't want to fight because they're slaves. Castrated slaves. This guy's a congressman. He's a congressman. He's a congressman. There are 10-year-olds who are more rational than Steve King. Okay. Next. President Erdogan and what he's up to in Turkey. Some of you may have seen this story over the weekend. And it scared the shit out of me. So yesterday was the one-year anniversary of the failed coup attempt in Turkey, and President Erdogan and the AKP, which is his party, had huge rallies across the country. Well, listen to what was said at one of these rallies. Let's watch.
Massive crowds have turned out across Turkey to mark 1 year since a failed coup attempt against Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Mr. Erdogan made appearances in Istanbul and in Ankara, and he unveiled this monument in the capital for people killed during the coup attempt. Since then, the president has led a mass crackdown. He says the U.S.-based cleric, Fethullah Gulen, was behind that coup attempt, and in Istanbul, he promised no mercy for those that he says betrayed the country.
We know who is behind these terrorists. However, there's also the fact that if you do not combat and fight against these pieces, we cannot fight and overcome those who are manipulating them. Therefore, we are going to behead these traitors.
One of the top allies of the U.S. There were allegations against Erdogan that not that long ago they had established basically a pact with ISIS in Syria. They had an oil deal where ISIS would send them oil from Syria to Turkey. And, of course, Turkey's aligned with the rebels in Syria, and most of the rebels at this point are Islamists and jihadists. They're fundamentalists. They're extremists. So Erdogan's a pretty bad character, and now he's openly talking about beheading people. Well, that's good. By the way, there's been tens of thousands of people who've been purged since the failed coup attempt. Erdogan is using this as an excuse to take everybody who's more liberal and secular and disagrees with him, kick them out of the universities, kick them out of their jobs, lock them up, no due process. There's been torture. There's been rape, according to Amnesty International, post the failed coup attempt. So Turkey going full-on police state. Forget secular democracy there. It's gone. Gone. And then there were the constitutional referendums that passed recently, which gave him the power to just decree and enact new laws. The fuck is that? That's nothing but a dictatorship. That's nothing but authoritarianism. So what we're dealing with here is Turkey sliding way back. And, you know, Erdogan is one of those people who he really does strike me as, man, he would love to start conquering more territory. He would love to start feeling like he's bringing the old Ottoman Empire back. And I think the U.S. would just kind of sit idly by, because when you're our ally, we let you do whatever you want. Look at Israel. New settlements all the time, taking more and more Palestinian land, just destroying Gaza through and through. And we just kind of sit there. You know, Saudi Arabia, you do whatever you want. Oppress your own people. Don't give women equal rights. Kill people for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling. We don't care. Yeah, whatever. You say all atheists are terrorists. I guess they are. Go right ahead. Here's more weapons. Here's more money. So we already know that if you're a partner with the U.S. business-wise, well, then you get to get away with whatever you want. So Erdogan is that. So he takes his country from a secular democracy into an authoritarian dictatorship, theocratic authoritarian dictatorship, talks about beheading people, has shown that he wants to expand further, viciously oppresses the Kurds. Shrug, eh, whatever. Horrendous. Again, our top allies. Some of our top allies just happen to embrace liberal values the least, as we proclaim to believe in liberal values. Human rights, democracy, freedom. Really? Then why Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey? New phone, who dis? Exactly. Okay. All right, final story of the day, everybody. And this one we end on a kind of a funny note here. There was an expensive art exhibit in Los Angeles done by an artist from Hong Kong named Simon Birch. And what he did is he put rows of 3D printed crowns next to each other. And the crowns were made of all types of materials, including nylon, brass, granite, and marble. And look at what happened to these crowns as a result of a selfie gone wrong. Okay, so for everybody listening and not watching, you have somebody squatted down in front of the thing, and there was a domino effect where a bunch of crowns fell over. And the person who's like in charge of the exhibit is freaking out. And now that guy's running. Oh, man, that was rough. That was rough. When the guy who was, like, in charge of the exhibit started running, I went, he's going to try to get help ASAP, and ain't nobody can help you now, buddy. It's all done. There was $200,000 worth of damage done. $200,000. I don't know what material all the different crowns were made out of, but there was a lot of really expensive ones, and they broke a bunch of them, and they needed repair. Some of them needed repair. Some of them, they say, are beyond repair. They're just beyond repair. All because somebody decided to squat in front of it to try to take a selfie. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of have, like, a personal jihad against, like, Facebook and selfies and all that stuff. Because, I don't know, there's something about it that just rubs me the wrong way, man. It's just, there's something so uber narcissistic about thinking that everybody wants to see you do normal, everyday things. Now, to be fair, this isn't a normal, everyday thing. It's not every day you're in front of an art exhibit that's probably in total worth, what, $600,000 or thereabouts, whatever it is. But, yeah, like, really, you just wasted $200,000. You destroy $200,000 worth of stuff to get, like, 12 likes on Facebook. Yeah, I don't know, man. And next time for the art, guys, put up some fucking ropes. How about that? They got no ropes, and they got all the fucking people. Like, you trust everybody from the public to not fuck something up? You got to put up some ropes, dude. Just give me 3 feet. Give me 4 feet. Give me something. Give me a little buffer. Little buffer zone, and then if people take the selfie and they fall over, whoops, okay, you hit the rope. But no, now it was $200,000 worth of damage. And you know why else I think this got under my skin a little bit? Because that's not like a modern art piece. You know what a modern art piece is like? Here, a can of Campbell's tomato soup. Now give me $800 that I let you look at it. Like, that's modern art. There's a lot of modern art that's just bullshit. A blank canvas, and I took a Bic pen and put a dot in the middle of it. I'm a genius. No, you're not. You're, like, scamming everybody. So if they fucked up a modern art exhibit, I'd be on their side. But they seem to fuck up an art exhibit that was actually art. Like, 3D printed crowns is pretty badass. And then that you made them out of marble and granite and all these different things. That's pretty cool, too. And then you had a bunch of them lined up. Like, okay, I'm kind of digging that. Like, I'm not a big art person, but that's some art where if I looked at it, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of cool. And somebody fucked it up. So, yeah. I mean, on the other hand, mistakes happen, and that I'm sure that poor woman didn't. There was no malice or anything, so she probably feels horrible, but. Oh, and they're not insured. They were like, we didn't have the money to insure it, and yeah, so we're fucked. Damn, son, when selfies go wrong. Okay. All right, everybody. That is the show. I love y'all, and we will be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know the drill. Have another jam-packed show for you. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. Much love. Mwah. Peace.